The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. On our last program, we were talking about leeches. For some, not a very pleasant topic. If you live in the tropics, you may have found yourself the host for some of these organisms. I have never had that experience. I don't covet it particularly, but I'm aware that where people have been forced for one reason or another to wade around in bodies of fresh water in the tropics, they may legitimately and usually will find that they have attracted leeches, and getting them off gets a little interesting. And as we observe, the fact that they inject an anticoagulant as they feed also means that the wound is going to be open and will bleed for some period of time after, and put the situation of having an open wound in the tropics can lead to a great many other difficulties, so it's not something to be desired. I had mentioned at the end of the program, one of the characteristics of leeches is that they have a fixed number of somites, and I was commenting about a characteristic of the earthworms that we didn't talk about earlier. Here in South Carolina, there really are two common kinds of earthworms. There are some rather small ones. They're known as red wigglers, and then the night crawlers. Now, if you will take any particular species of earthworm, the number of somites is identical, and more than that, the position of the structures in the earthworm body are always the same. So if you know a particular species, you can know that in segments, whatever, 11 through 16, if you were to dissect that animal, you would find pairs of aortic arches there. Or you look further back, 20-some-odd, you'd find reproductive organs and so on. And the number of somites appears in leeches appears greater than it actually is. The highest number, I think, is 34. But they appear to have many more because there is a transverse wrinkle in the middle of the somite that makes it appear that there are two there when there really is only one. As has been suggested, and as you probably would be aware, most of the leeches are fluid feeders, and generally blood, though not always. And there are other organisms that they will feed on. And leeches generally are not fussy about the kind of blood. They just want the blood, so that any animal that wanders into their habitat, cattle, horses, whatever, human beings, are going to find that they are the object of intense interest by the leeches. There are some leeches that will live on insect larvae as well as earthworms, which seems to be a little unfair somehow to make a living off some of your whatever cousins, but there are a few that will do that. The reproduction, this is bisexual reproduction again. The organisms are hermaphrodites, that is monoecious. Each individual will have both sets of reproductive organs, and so you have the similarity to the reproduction that you find in earthworms generally. They will have, they're rather complicated in the sense that the body systems are well defined. They are reasonably complex. The digestive system of the leeches is different from the digestive system of earthworms. I don't think we talked about that at the time, but the digestive system in earthworms is divided up into a number of sections. crop, gizzard, etc. And you don't have that in the case of the leeches. There is rather a system of compartments there, which apparently is helpful in storing the excessive amounts of blood that a single leech, single animal can ingest at one time. Now, as you might suspect, there is a good deal of discussion about the evolution of the organisms here and the evolution of other organisms along with annelids. We introduced the term metamerism, the presence of body sections, somites, metamers, whatever, because in some phyla that is such an obvious, a unique characteristic. The evolutionists have spent a great deal of time in trying to use this as a basis for common ancestors or whatever. In the case of the earthworm, it is not difficult. But in many cases, they will profess to see metamerism, body segments, in other organisms, even in mollusks. I don't imagine most of you have dissected clams, for example. This is usually one of the animals that would be dissected in an invertebrate zoo class. And I will confess to you, I'm a little skeptical. When you look at the body structures that are present in the clam, I have some difficulty in thinking that you can actually find metamerism in the body of the clam, although most textbooks tell you that. But however you view that, it is very interesting to me that there is no trace of body segments in any immature mollusk. So this is a characteristic that appears only in the adult. Now, how you're going to use even an imagined characteristic such as somites or body segments in an adult mollusk as a basis of connecting it to the earthworms, where you have such an obvious example of somites, is a little difficult for me to comprehend. Most evolutionists, I think, would also argue that there is a relationship between annelids and arthropods. Now, it is true that in the arthropoda, you can find well-defined, obvious examples of somites. We'll talk about the arthropods probably at great length because of their numbers later. These are the animals that have a hard exoskeleton. And there are, within a particular organism, well-defined collections of somites. Some of them have a head, a cephalothorax, an abdomen, and there are various combinations of those. But the body sections there are quite obvious. There is an animal known as Peripatus, or the phylum name is Onychophora. It is a worm-like creature that many evolutionists will try and argue is a missing link between annelids and arthropods. Again, the lie would be given to that when you look at the embryology of Onychophora. And the embryology, again, you're not going to find the somites that are there. You're going to find that the embryology of Onychophora is completely different from the embryology of arthropoda. And even though you can find segments, and by the way, in arthropods, in most cases, you're going to find somites in the immature stages as well. If there are any of you that have suffered through all of this during the series of programs, you'll recall that we talked at great length about the idea of homology, the idea that similarity proves relationship, the evolutionist interpretation of homology. And it is an idea that you will find repeated over and over and over and over again. Now let's look. I want to look again at a section at the end of the chapter on Annelida in the Invertebrate Zoo book that we use, Hickman, Roberts, and Larson's book, the 10th edition of Hickman's book. I want you to listen now to the discussion by evolutionists regarding the relationship between earthworms, marine annelids, and leeches, as they are thought by the evolutionists to be related to other phyla. I'm reading from page 365. There are so many similarities in the early developments of the mollusks, annelids, and primitive arthropods that there seems little doubt about their close relationship. Now, if we were to examine carefully the structure, behavior, etc., of the immature stages of these organisms, I really don't think the similarities are very similar. I don't think there is anything in that, at that level of development, that would be persuasive as far as trying to link all three of these organisms, these phyla, together. But at least this is the evolutionist notion about it. To continue, these three phyla apparently form a sister group to the flatworms. Now, the flatworms, of course, are composed of tapeworms, flukes. There is no metamerism at all, no body segments. You have the proglottids that we've talked about in the case of the tapeworms. So apparently the inclination here is some of the worms are going to be tossed into the flatworms, primarily, I think, because they are depressed, to use the technical term for it. This means they are flattened dorsoventrally. So any worm that has that body shape is going to be stuck in the so-called sisterhood of the flatworms. Many marine annelids and mollusks have early embryogenesis typical of the protostomes. This is an animal that has a single body opening. And again, I think we've talked about the term before. Let me go in here. Annelids share with the arthropods an outer secreted cuticle and have similar nervous systems and the lateral appendages, and goes on with some other characteristics. Now, the fact, in some cases this is exactly right. There are some similarities there. But I repeat to you that unless there is evidence of a reproductive link, the similarities have no relationship. There's no way that you can prove a characteristic on one organism is evidence of relationship unless there is some possibility of that characteristic being passed from parent to offspring. And this is the thing that is missing. So the evolutionist then simply looks at organisms. If there are similar characteristics, he immediately leaps to the conclusion that these characteristics are themselves evidence of evolution, rather than being willing simply to accept the idea that God created them that way.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson @bju.edu, or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.